Very nice for me to be here this morning, and I'm impressed that people are here. I think this is the last Sunday of Sphira, so there's about, probably four or five breakfasts and luncheons that I know that are going on today. So it's nice to see that people were able to make time to do learning. I want to have a little fun this morning and just go through some of the psukim in Megillat Rut and see how much we could learn just from a few psukim in Megillat Rut, the kind of thing that we can all enjoy doing even on our own. We're talking here probably about a sefer that stylistically reads very simply. It feels like we're in one of the books of the Nevi'im, and that's because it takes place during that time, during Shvot HaShvotim. It's written by Shmuel HaNavi, so it's no surprise that it feels very Tanakhi when we read it. It's not Shir HaShirim, it's not a poem, it's not Kohelet, and it doesn't have the more modern feel of a post-biblical period of Megillat Esther. Despite the simplicity of the narrative, the more you explore this work and the deeper you go, the more complex the connections become, the richer the meanings. And in fact, it's so engaging that I'm just going to show you two new books that have come out about Megillat Rut, like now. They both have imprints of 2015. I don't know if Yael Ziegler had a chance to speak here this year, but Yael Ziegler's big tome on Rut, which is really very pasuk b'pasuk, very Machon Herzog. There are like charts comparing psukim and the parallelism, and that might be something that you might want to look at as we approach the Chag. Quite by accident, I came upon this. Moshe Miller is somebody who is going to be a scholar in residence just a little bit in our show next week. He's speaking at Mincha and Tzedah Shlishi. His book has haskamot of Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Wein, Emanuel Feldman, Eli Shever Kalabach, and David Schatz. And he himself is not a YU person. He has smicha from Neri Yisrael. So because he is a scholar in residence, I happened to get on his website, first of all, and then yesterday, Friday, in all places in the dentist's office, I found it sitting on the desk of the dentist. He had just gotten it as a gift from a friend of his. I'm like, oh my God, unbelievable. Beautiful, rising moon. Amazing, deeply rising moon, deeply textual, very broad in its scope, fascinating, beautifully written. So this is like as of yesterday. This is like Shabbos afternoon yesterday. So I just want that. It's like such an engaging work that, you know, the things just keep coming out about it. And I thought you might be interested in that as we get closer to Shuel. Excuse me? His name is Moshe Miller. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about today about how the text is filled with past and future. But before we end, I also want to see, you know, what take-home messages we can use from this sefer. So I don't want to just stay only in the text at the end. I want to see what message we can take home for ourselves. So the first thing I want to look at is Source Aleph, where we talk about the very, very first pasuk in Megillat Esther, Vayihi bimei Shvot HaShoftim, Vayihi Ra'av Ba'aretz, Vayelech Ish mibeit Lechem Yehuda, Lagur b'Sdei Moab, Hu v'Ishto u'Shnei Banav. Amazing that in one little pasuk we can find so much. We're going to go a little bit into pasuk Bet, which is not here. If we take a look at Shvot HaShoftim, we're not just talking about the period of the judges, but it's referred to by some Mefarshim as Shvot HaShoftim, a period of anarchy where people are judging the judges. Another work that I want to point your attention to is a work all in Hebrew, so you have to work on it a little bit. It's Avraham. I don't know if you're familiar with Rav Yoni Grossman, Dr. Yoni Grossman, who is a professor at Bar Ilan, who lives in Alon Shvud. He also teaches at Machon Herzog. So if you take a look at that work, it's a big work, following the life of Avraham. There you see we are in Sodom, which we know all the references that we're going to find to Sodom and Moab here. It says there about Lot, Vayomru, Ha'echad Ba'lagur, Vayishpot Shafot, regarding Lot, you come here as a stranger to live here, and now you're going to judge us. You think you're the boss? So you see this notion of Shvat HaShoftim, like it's something that's not new to Sefer Shoftim or to Megillat Rut. Atane Ralachamehem. Now we're going to do worse to you than we did to them, to these people who were here. So here now in Rut is the beginning of a story that's the beginning of the end of Anki. It's the beginning of Malchut Beit David, the beginning of real leadership as opposed to these Shoftim who are constantly being judged by their peers. What characterizes this period of the Shoftim? So if you take a look in Source Bet there, we have there in Perek Aleph something which we are unfortunately familiar with, a loss of idealism in Eretz Yisrael. And you see a refrain as you look at this, and it goes on to the second page, where there's a constant refrain of v'lo harish, v'lo harish. At the beginning of the Perek in Shoftim, Klal Yisrael is doing what they're supposed to do. They're conquering the enemy. And then all of a sudden there's this loss. And it's like, well, we're not going to chase them out, but rather, to use our more current terms, we're going to become an occupying power and charge them tax. And, you know, we start to pay a price for that. In terms of our political reality today, that's another story, but you start to see the hints of what we're living through today in Shvot HaShoftim. If you take then a look at Pasuk Bet, which I don't have here on the store sheet, but which is certainly easy enough to get a hold of, right? You're going to see there, V'shem ha'ish Elimelech, V'shem ishto Na'ami, V'shem shnei banav Machlon v'kilyon, Ephratim mi-beit lechem Yehuda, V'yavos de'moa v'yihi sham. I guess we could have seen this from Pasuk Aleph as well. What we have here is the V'yihi Ra'av, and the V'yihi Ra'av reminds us of that theme that we see in Bereshit all the time. Ra'av after Ra'av after Ra'av, and all of these times of famine, and I have them listed out here for you, that we see that these times of Ra'av are a challenge. We have the Ra'av in the time of Abraham. Some people think that Ra'av is really a challenge to Abraham, throwing down the gauntlet, spread the message of Hashem further in other places. For Yitzchak, it's a test, the Vayihi Ra'av. How committed is he to Eretz Yisrael? Will he stay there, the Olah Tmima? For the children of Yaakov, the unbelievable Ra'av, the ultimate Ra'av, it's an opportunity to reconcile with their brothers, and ultimately the vehicle through which history is driven forward. Here, the Ra'av, and the Rashi is here, is a punishment and a test, which is failed by Elimelech, who had the ability to help his family, and he left selfishly to the fields of Moab. He himself was not starving. Abraham was hungry, Yitzchak was hungry, Elimelech was just fine, thank you. And he leaves selfishly to the field of Moab, to the fields of Moab, and we know who these people are. These are the people who are characterized by selfishness. Asher lo kidmu etchem belechem ubamayim. I want to go back for a second to Rav Grossman's work on Abraham, where he talks about that point where Lot leaves and he wants to go towards Sdom. And Sdom is described as Kigan Hashem Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. This is before Yam HaMelech, before that whole debacle that ruins the water system right there. And what he says is, I mean, what's wrong with somebody wanting to go and have a good economy and be okay? And these countries, Gan Hashem, Gan Eden, Sodom at that time, Mitzrayim, what's unique about them? They are fed by rivers. So therefore, they don't need to depend on rain, on Geshem. And that in itself becomes something fascinating for us. A sort of need to turn to Hashem, of a dependence on Hashem that this man is not interested in. 2 days ago, I got a text from my daughter. She found on the wall of the children's school in Gush Etzion poems on Medinat Yisrael for Yom Ha'atzma'ut, and there was her 9-year-old son poem, 14 lines. I can't read it all to you here, but it was like amazing. It was supposed to be sung to the tune of Eretz Yisrael Shali, you know, right? Parachat, right? Here are two of the lines, just so you should know how 9-year-olds are being taught in Eretz Yisrael. Two lines in the middle. Eretz Yisrael tzarich geshem, v'ze mekarev otanu lelokim, v'ze notein mayim u'matzmiach prachim. So here, 9-year-olds in Eretz Yisrael are taught to understand that the fact that we don't have big rivers that fill our land is in itself a bracha that requires us to be dependent on Hashem, and it brings us closer to Hashem. This is something that Lot was not interested in. You want sort of that independent economy where that's not what you're doing. Okay? If we go back, Sodom and Moab are located in the exact same reasons, right? This is Lot. They are separating from each other. Lot was, in some ways, as we will see, a very successful student of Avraham Avinu in terms of understanding Chesed. And certainly in this way, there may were issues of great failure where he did not incorporate those lessons into his life. Okay? Moab in Sodom is the product of a desperate act of incest between a very well-meaning daughter whose intention was to recreate a world that she was thought was lost. It's like a nuclear holocaust. And she thought she was doing something good. Okay? If we move forward in our one pasuk here, the scene for the story is Beit Lechem Yehuda. This is the tribe of Malchut Yehuda. But Beit Lechem is... what does it remind us of? It reminds us of Rachel. Okay, the residents in Pasuk Bet, as we read, are called Ephratim. And this Ephrat, Beit Lechem, evoked for us memories of Rachel Imenu, the tragic birth of Binyamin. Vatamat, in Source Zion, Vatamat Rachel v'tikaver b'derech Ephrata, he Beit Lechem. So here we see, in Pasuk Aleph and in Pasuk Bet, we are already encountering the themes that run through the entire Megillah that affect the very future of the Jewish people. Okay. I want to explore for 1 minute the love of Eretz Yisrael and Avraham, two themes that are evoked by Shvod HaShoftim and Vayihi Ra'av. Our entitlement to Eretz Yisrael depends on our love for Eretz Yisrael. As I just said, faith in the Ribono Shel Olam as master of the universe in many ways finds its ultimate expression in our willingness, or in many of our cases, including my own, our unwillingness, to go to Eretz Yisrael. The first Jew not only must believe in Hashem, but he has to follow the command of Hashem to go to Eretz Yisrael. So much does this have to be ingrained in the Jewish people that when Eliezer is sent out, if you look at Source Chet, to look for a wife for Yitzchak, Eliezer asks, what happens? Im lo tova ha'isha lelechet acharai el ha'aretz hazot. What if this girl, this great girl that I find, doesn't want to go to Eretz Yisrael? Does anybody have dating children? All right? What if this guy doesn't want, you know, fine. So he'll be a nice guy. He won't get to Israel. We've all dealt with this in our lives and in our families. And here, in this ultimate Shana date, what happens if she doesn't want to go? He hashev hashev et binchal ha'aretz, right? El ha'aretz hashev yatzat misham. Maybe I should bring Yitzchak back here. To which Avraham responds, says, that's the sign that it's the wrong girl. She doesn't want to come. V'nikita mishuat hizav. Then you no longer have to find this girl. Because if she doesn't want to come back to Eretz Yisrael, right, it's the wrong girl. We always think that it's Yitzchak. We're worried about Yitzchak, the Olat Mimav, the Akedah, that he can't leave Israel. And that's the reason why. But it really has more to do with the fact that the girl has to be the girl who wants to leave Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because what we're doing here, right, is understanding, looking in road back to those values that have to be reinforced in Malchut Yehuda. Right? These are the people who have to reinforce in the Malchut the love of Eretz Yisrael. only someone from, unfortunately, right? Someone from another place, a person, ironically a woman, just like each one of the Imahot, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Vilea, she is the one who actually reestablishes, in a time of diminished idealism, she establishes really moments before the birth of David, when we speak historically, that sense of this is someplace that I have to go. This is not something incidental, this is a core value for the Jewish people. Okay? So we're like a little more than halfway through Sfira. I know Rav Goldberg, Shlita spoke about Lag BaOmer, so now we're going to go pass that onward to our march to Shavuot. Next week we're going to read Parshat Emor. And if you take a look at Parshat Omer, right after, right, he talks about the Yom Tov of Shavuot of Matan Torah, without a break, before going to Yom Kippur, they talk there in Emor about Leket and Peah and Shikha. Right? That is the mitzvah that plays such a large role in the Gilat Rut. Okay? Part of Matan Torah, part of the Am Segula, is understanding that chesed and doling out and leaving things over for the aniyim is understanding that chesed is part and parcel of Klal Yisrael. If Malchut has its source in Lot and Moab, this is Rut, who is a child of Moab, who typifies stinginess, so how do we allow that whole gene pool to be part of Klal Yisrael? Lot is a person who certainly at this point cannot share. He can't remain with Avraham. And Avraham says to him, he parade not me alai. And it's very interesting that if you read here in Source Yud, one of our Midrashim says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was actually angry with Avraham, that he couldn't stick it out with Lot. If you take a look here, you see that in Source Yud, and then what follows, in Yud Aleph, Hashem says, Vashem Amar al Avraham, Rav Yudha Amar, Ka'as Hayala Avinu Avraham, V'sha'ash Shepiresh Lot Ben Achiv Mi'imo, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, L'chol Midabek U'lalot Achiv Eino Midabek. You could be there for every person, and for your family you can't be there, which is so typical, right? We're so nice to everybody, then we come home and, you know, less than lovely to our family. So you see that the hiparedna, this notion of separating, this tension within the family, is a problem characterized by this whole move out to Sodom and Moab. If you take a look, what does Ruth say in the next source that we have in Yudbet? What does she say? What's the tikkun? Ki hamavet yafrid beini ubenecha. I'm not separating from you. Naomi is not separating. Ruth is not separating. Only death is going to separate us. And then, of course, we have the famous Midrash that tells us, B'shvil shtei predot tovot. I think it's the end of, if I can take a look at it. Right? I have it here somewhere. Right? Yud Gimel, right? Right? That's in Baba Kama. These two predot, these two, like, let's just say genes that we separated out, it was worth it for these two people and the genes that they carried to save these nations. Rav Yaakov Medan has a lovely sefer, Ma'amakim, I think, with Tigva. You know, one of those little books that comes out from Machon Herzog. I don't want to call it a little book. It's quite an amazing essay. And he writes eloquently of the fact that despite Lot's failings, he really had within him a lot of what he learned in Abraham's home. A little corrupted, you know, and he's willing to give his daughters to be raped instead of his guests. Right, but certainly there was that sense, that gene of chesed. Right, he was the only citizen of stone who was willing to welcome guests, and in fact, he even bakes for these. Matzot afa, his wife refused to bake. Right, and he suggests that unlike Sarah, when these very same guests came, right, so it says, Avraham runs and says, Mahari Lushi Ugot, right? These were for the same guests, and Sarah bakes. His wife won't bake, but Lot bakes for them. right? So in this, what Maidan says is, even though it's somewhat gone awry and he's trying to give away his daughters, and by the way, you should think about that a little bit. I sometimes wonder how much of my family, like over the years, we've sacrificed when we have guests and not. Say, I'll just, for an anecdote, tell you that I remember there was one year when the children were quite small and we had a lot of, how should we say, interesting guests for the Siddurim. Very interesting people. So my children were maybe like in upper elementary school, the oldest. They begged us that for the second Seder that we only have the family. And we're like, ah. Like, what kind of a Seder is it going to be? Just us? You know, like, that's not a Seder. And like, but we decided we would yield to them. That was it forever. One Seder, only family. It was probably the most beautiful Seder that we ever had. That we, they were able to say every single one of their, you know, they had notebooks full of things to say. They sang at the top of their lungs, which was hard for them to do, and there was company there. We danced around the table, and when we were singing L'shana Haba B'Yerushalayim, I remember, I had my eyes closed, but I opened them for a second, and I saw that one of the kids had tears going down their face. And you ask yourself, you know, you don't have to be a sort of corrupted chesed of lot to be sacrificing our family for the chesed that we do for outsiders. Right? And that changed our Pesach forever and ever. There was always one Seder just with family, and it's always the most amazing Seder. The discussion's on a different level, the singing's on a different level. I would urge us all to look at that. At any rate, Rav Maidan suggests that the people of Moab inherited their mother's selfishness gene, and that Rut alone inherited Lot's gene of chesed. A very, very interesting modern take. So Predot, a sort of genetic separating out of this. Continuing still in this, like, Pasuk Aleph and Bet, in terms of Beit Lechem and Ephrat, Yehuda and Binyamin, Leah and Rachel, you know that the Beit HaMikdash is built on the chelek of Yehuda and Binyamin. That's a shared chelek over there. And the Midrash tells us that there cannot be a malchut from Leah without the presence of Rachel. It was only because Rachel gave her sister the simanim that she was supposed to show Yaakov that Leah becomes his wife. Leah doesn't make it into our history without Rachel. So there is no Malchut Beit David, there is no Mashiach ben David without Mashiach ben Yosef paving the way. And as the first perek ends, the themes of the past are replayed. Okay, you will find it. I think it is, it's on the next page, it's source Yadalad. It goes to the next page, it's page 6. Vatashav Naami Verut HaMoavia Kalata Ima Hashava Misde Moav Vehema Ba'u Beit Lechem B'tchilat Ktsir HaSeirim. Vatashav MiMoav, you see here like the Tikkun, right? We're returning from Moav. We're leaving that value system. And they come to Beit Lechem, of course, it's rife with meaning, Ra'av Lechem, etc., but turning forward to Malchut Beit David, that was the seat of his kingdom, B'tchilat Tzir HaSa'orim, which of course resonates for us in terms of the holiday of Shavuot and the concept of Peah and Lechet et Shikracha, and the notion of Chesed. Let's look briefly at Perek Bet. I think this is like one of my favorite things. Perek Bet immediately demonstrates itself as a bridge between the past and the future. What do we have there? In source Tetvav, Ula Naami Moda Leisha. Naami has a relative from her husband's side, Ish Gibor Chayel Mimishpachet Elimelech Ushmo Boaz. Okay, I want us to turn back here to Bereshit Yudchet in the next source. This pasuk, ki yedativ l'man asher yitzaved banav et beito acharav v'shamru derech Hashem, which is said to Avraham, if you go back to the original Perek Yetet, you're going to see it's in the middle of the story of Sodom. So right in the middle of this, okay, as the people in Sodom are exercising their selfishness and others are calling out, why is Avraham chosen as the founder of the Jewish people? Because I know him. I know that he's going to command his children afterwards. If you read the Rashi there, it is almost eerie. The Rashi says, Ki yedativ, what does that mean? It means because I know him, I recognize him. It says in Rashi, Lashon Chiba, this is a language of love. Kimo Rut, Modala Isha, doesn't say Karov Isha, it says Modala Isha, Halo Boaz Modatanu. Two times we refer to Boaz as the Modah, taking us straight from Avraham to this story. I'm going to suggest here that Modah, this unusual word for relative, is not a coincidental word. It's used here because it means something more than a relative. It's really the past brought forward. Modah is the result of Ki Yedativ. This is the result of Avraham commanding his family and teaching them the values that he taught them. He is the one that was the Man Yitzaved Banav Acharav. He is that child who, because of his very link to the past, of Boaz's link to the past, this Modah, the Man Yedativ, he is our future. He's the success story of Avraham's good parenting. And so it's no surprise to us that shortly thereafter, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, he recognizes in Rut exactly what Avraham would have wanted his descendant to recognize. What does it say? He says to Rut, "V'ta'azvi avich v'imeich v'eretz moladeteich v'talchi el am asher lo yadat mitmol shalshom." Look at you. You left your father and your mother and your birthplace, and you went to a place that you didn't know. Which, of course, is just a restatement of Lech Lecha Me'artzecha U'mimoladecha U'mibeit Avicha El Ha'aretz Asher Arecha. In Rut, in you, I have found the values of Avraham and Sarah reborn. Right? If you continue reading there, you see Pasuk Yitbet, there are the allusions that she's going to hide, she's going to take protection, Tachas Knafav, allusions to Kanfei, Nisharim, and Geula. And finally, there in Source Yevchet, Rut responds, foreshadowing the future, V'anochi lo eheyeh ke'achat shivchateich. I am not going to be a shivcha, a maid servant. Indeed, without her realizing it, she is saying, not a shivcha, not a maidservant, but rather the ima shel malchut. By the way, we point out that in taking the Rut that the other imahot took, Rut is the only other woman in Tanakh who is referred to as ima. She is known as the ima shel malchut. So she is really, it's almost like the fifth of the imahot having taken the same route that the other imahot took. Perek Gimel, now we're forward. Okay? I'm going to find it for you. It's in one of the Gemarot. I have it here on my side, and I will find it for you. Talk to me afterwards, Barbara. Okay. It's in my margin. One pasuk that I'm sorry that I forgot to include here, which is very important for us in Perek Yemom, is a word which repeats itself at the beginning of Perek Yemom three times. We have here, Vata halo boaz modatanu asher hayit et na'arotav, hinehu zore et hagoren hasa'orim laila. Boaz is to be found on the threshing floor. And we read further, and it says, Vatered hagoren, right? The Yaradit Hagoren. Three times we have this notion that Boaz is to be found at the Goren. Hey, that's in, just if you want to write it down, it's in Rut Perek Gimel, Pasuk Bet, Pasuk Gimel, and Pasuk Vav. Okay. It's a word of tremendous significance. Does it strike a bell with anybody? Nothing? If you go take a look in Shmuel, okay, where is the Beit HaMikdash built? The Beit HaMikdash is built on a field that David HaMelech purchases. It is field, the Goren, the threshing floor, of Aravna HaYavusi. Okay? We could decide to get cute and talk about Ger. Ruth is a Ger, and Aravna HaYavusi is also a Ger Tzedek, Goren. But more than that, his name Aravna speaks to us of Rivaya, of overflowing. Look at the name Rut. Resh, Vav, Tav. Rava, overflowing. If you think I'm pushing it, okay? There's the source, because it's easy to push it when you're reading Megillat Rut. There's just so much, okay? Babatra, I have it there for you. I think it's source Chaf Aleph, says, Lama Nikreit Shma Rut. Why was she called Rut? Sheyatsami menu David, that who came forth from her David, Sherivahu lahakadosh baruch hu, he was overflowing toward hakadosh baruch hu, but she wrote the tishbacha with songs and praise. So the name Aravna, root and overflowing, is a very, very serious connection. What do we do in the Goren? What we do in the Goren is we take the wheat and we beat it, and we pull out the best that's there, and we leave the rest behind. Okay? Of course, that's really what the story of Ruth is all about, in terms of where she comes from and who she is and what's happening here. Perek Dalet speaks to us of Geulah, both in the halachic sense of being a goel, of redeeming, right? We don't have here real Yibum with Boaz, that would be a brother for his brother's widow, but the notion of a relative marrying a widow, a widow of a relative, is called Geulah, but of course the word for us is amazing. Okay? And if we take a look in Perek Dalet Pasuk Hey, again, I'm not sure that I have the pasuk here for you. It says, Biyom kinotcha hasadeh miyad na'ami. Boaz is speaking to the Goel, and we're talking about buying a field. And who else? Who else acquired a field for the future and insisted on a kinyan? If we go back to Abraham Avinu and buying a field from Ephron Hachiti, so we see this notion of buying a field in order for a sense of permanence for the future. And then David HaMelech reenacts the same story with Aravna. Aravna, who also wanted to give him this Goren as a gift, and David refused to have it as a gift and insisted on buying it. You needed like something permanent, because what happens if the friendship goes bad? We're not relying on friendship for this. I need to know that this is a permanent acquisition. So this whole notion here plays itself out. And of course, throughout this sefer, we have references to Yibum, again, a version of which Yehuda was forced to do with Tamar, an incestuous version which Lod and his daughters perform. This is the act that draws on the dead past to redeem the future. And of course, the beautiful pasuk Yud Aleph here towards the end. Hey, let me find it for you, where we talk about, I'm going past Aravna HaYavusi for a second. By the way, if you take a look at the name Aravna, just look at the letters. Aron Hashem. I mean, the language is just so filled with things. It's amazing. Okay. So if you take a look at source Chaf Bet, where we see, Vayomru kol ha'am asher basha'ar v'hazakenim edim, yitain Hashem et ha'isha haba'a el beitecha kirachel uchaleya. May this woman who has now entered your home be like Rachel and Leah, asher banushtehim et Beit Yisrael, that both of them built the future of the Jewish establishment, Va'asechayil be'efrata, there's that name, ukra shem be'beit lechem. All the themes just amazingly tied up in one pasuk. Finally, the last of the pesukim, not here, the narrator Shmuel, who is writing in his time, but it feels like he's standing right there. It feels like he's standing in Beit Lechem Ephrat. It feels like the narrator is of the time. And with his broad perspective, he comes in with a genealogical list that turns backward to Peretz, born of the union of Yehuda and his daughter-in-law Tamar, and pivots forward to David HaMelech, reminding us that the only way to build our future is to go back and to seek out every positive spark and redeem them from our past. These are the themes of Yibum and Geula that support the entire story of Megillat Rut and the birth of kingship. Just before I conclude, I just want to add a note, and sometimes it can give us hope. Two stories about redeem the past. Remember, quite a number of years ago, I remember we have an outreach organization in Great Neck called Project Identity. And one of our families had become observant, one of the children is married now, and they were little then. The father of this woman who was speaking was not Jewish. And I remember her talking there that night about the pain that this brought her grandfather. And now they were observant, very active in our shul. The children went to yeshivas and studied in Eretz Yisrael. And I remember she looked up and then she said, "So, Grandpa, how are we doing?" At a time when there was just so much pain, we don't know how that story is going to end when we talk about redeeming the past. A number of years ago, I went to the wedding, the child of a friend of mine, a very, very, very yeshivish family. I'm not going to identify the yeshiva that they're with. And a special daughter. The young man's last name is Italian. His father is Italian. His mother is not at all observant. I don't know, somewhere he landed in somebody's house where he lived out of town at the age of 16 and became so ardently religious. She had one of her sons in that yeshiva follow him around for 2 weeks to make sure that he was indeed what the Rosh Yeshiva said he was. And there he was under the chuppah with his Italian father, by the way, who was so proud of him, and his mother, this unbelievable family that, you know, when you talk about redeeming little sparks from the past, this is not just something for a beautiful biblical story. Sometimes we have to remain optimistic and realize that this is something that could happen in our own lives with all the problems that we are experiencing now with our kids. I want to end with two thoughts. We here, me, all of us, we live in a kind of a Moav. It's a land which has taken us in times of strife. What would we do without America? I often wonder when the last Sefer of Tanakh is written, what role is the United States of America going to have in that last Sefer of Tanakh and how it has played itself out in the lives of the Jewish people. It's allowed us to make our homes here, but we have learned here, in addition to the values of liberty and tolerance, we have also learned here, along with our compatriots, selfishness. We have learned that material success and luxury is an important value in and of itself. We live in a time of an amazingly successful Eretz Yisrael, something nobody could have imagined, and yet, simultaneously, from some quarters, we see an awful waning of idealism, a willingness to cut deals and just make do. Right? All of this so terrifyingly portrayed in Sefer Shoftim. And of course, all of us are sitting here, not in Efrat, and certainly not in Beit Lechem. Megillat Rut reminds us, from the first pasuk to the last, that the only way to build our future is to reconnect with those original values that include bitachon b'Hashem, faith in God, which is fully connected to love of Eretz Yisrael and to chesed, to giving. The Midrash tells us that Ruth lived to see her great-great-grandson Shlomo sitting on the throne. Okay, that's, I believe, in source Chav Gimel in Baba Batra. Some say, and this is in Rut Rabbah, which is not here, Rut Rabbah Bet, that Rut did not die until she saw Shlomo judge the case of the Zonot, the two prostitutes who argued over their two babies, one of whom had died. We all know this story. Imagine. Yes? The story? Yes, Zonot. That's what they're called in the Hera, right? And they're called Zonot. Okay? Imagine the Ima Shel Malchut, the mother of royalty, saw her great-great-grandson define for all people, for all time, what the very definition of the word mother is. This woman who thought, after her sons died, that she would never have a child. The ultimate nachas, the ultimate message of hope, the whole world, the whole future, born out of the cataclysm and destruction of Sodom and the evil nation of Moab. We look at Megillat Rut, and we say in the words of David HaMelech, Kosi Rivayah, my cup overflows.